Let's start with verse 1. Colossians chapter 3. Let me see if I have it here. I don't. Let's see if I can find it. Aha. Here we go. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. When the Bible says, if ye then be risen with Christ, you could say, since you then have been risen with Christ. It basically means the same thing. It's written to God's people, and the Bible says, if you're risen with Christ, then you are to seek those things which are above. And there are several examples in the chapter. Look, if you would, at verse 2. Set your affection on things above. Look at verse 5. Mortify, put to death, therefore, your members. Look at verse 8. Now are you also to put off all things, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communications out of your mouth. Look at verse 9. Lie not. Look at verse 13. Forbearing one another, verse 14. And above all these things, he says in verse 14, put charity in your life, that would be love, verse 15. And let the peace of God dwell, verse 17. Whatsoever you do in word or in truth, you're to do that all to the glory of God. And then verse 18, wives submit, verse 19. Husbands love, verse 20. Children obey, and verse 22, servants obey. Now, we could spend all morning and all of several mornings looking at Colossians chapter 3. If you're risen with Christ, these things should be true in your life. You ought to seek those things which are above. Your affection, that is your love of, your liking of, should be of things in heaven and not things on this earth. Now, these truths were given to us by God. It was written by the apostle. It was given to us. It's given to the church. And in the church, those who lead the church teach these truths. But the rubber meets the road when you get to the family, because dad and mom are to teach all of these things to their children. So dad and mom are supposed to work at inculcating, putting into the mind of children those things which they are to learn. So when you get to verse 20, it says, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing in the Lord. Verse 21 is really interesting. Look down at verse 21. He says here, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. So the idea is, dads, don't provoke your children to anger, lest they be disheartened, spiritless. Somebody says, well, you want to train your kids, but you don't want them to lose their spirit. Well, I think normally that statement is ill-advised. They shouldn't be spiritless. The children shouldn't be, but they won't be spiritless if they are properly taught and if they obey. We'll come back to that in a minute. Now, the question I have this morning is, what kind of children that you have are you to train? For example, what if your child is going through a stage? What if he's going through a stage? Wouldn't it be harder to teach a child if he was going, forgive me, I have less patience for this than I should, if he's going through a stage? I really don't believe on this going through a stage business. Well, somebody says, well, isn't there a difference between a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old? Well, yes, there is. And if you want to call that being a stage, that's fine with me. But I have never bought the terrible twos. If you have children, there is the terrible ones, the terrible twos, the terrible threes, the terrible fours, the terrible eights, the terrible 13s, and the terrible 15s. And the reason for that is all of us are born with a nature that is sinful. My children sinned because their parents sinned. Well, at least their mother. I don't know. I don't know about everybody in the family, but no. Obviously, my children sinned because their parents sinned. So, what if the child What if he's going through a stage? Well, the Bible doesn't deal with that, does it? We do. People will often ask me, well, what if I have a 14-year-old and he's rebellious? Well, that's a legitimate question, but that he's 14-year-old is not as significant as the asker thinks, because he still needs to be taught and trained, does he not? Now, it's more difficult if he's not been trained properly. He's been trained by parents, even if it's improper. But if he's not been trained properly for the first 13 years, it's difficult to start when he's 14. I understand that. But the deal is, it doesn't say here, fathers, you're to train your children, and if they're two or if they're six, and don't let them be dispirited. If they're eight, doesn't say that. Just says kids. Doesn't it? What if the child is stubborn? Now, you probably aren't interested in this point because probably you don't have any stubborn children, but occasionally you'll find a child that is stubborn. Somebody asked my father once, when there were four of us in the home, four kids, they asked, Dad, are any of your children stubborn? And Dad said, yes, three of them are very stubborn. And then he said, the fourth one is worse. So now I'm not going to tell you who the fourth one was, because I really don't think that's important for us to get involved in. But don't we all have stubborn children? So what if he's stubborn? Any difficulty if he's stubborn? Let's see, what if he doesn't obey? Well, that's the issue, isn't it? What if he's smart? This is an issue that I never had to deal with. But what if your children are really intelligent? You know, sometimes that does provide a challenge, does it not? He's really smart. He's really smart. Have you ever read Calvin and Hobbes? This amazes me, but I love Calvin and Hobbes. I couldn't stand the kid if he really lived. He's in first grade, and he has to do papers, term papers, and he has to do math that would include stuff like algebra. So it's just a lot of fun. But he's really a little rebel. And Calvin has a stuffed tiger, which is Hobbes. And when nobody's around, the tiger is taller than Calvin, because in his mind he is. And when mom or dad shows up, the tiger's, you know, about this size. Well, Calvin says to Hobbes, the tiger, they're in the room. He says to Hobbes, you know, I'm too smart for school. I don't need to be in school. People don't realize my genius. And Hobbes kind of rolls his eyes and said, well, yes, I guess so. And in fact, he said, you know, Einstein, he said, made poor grades in school. He was a genius. That was his point. Einstein made poor grades in school. And he said, mine are even worse than his. So his logic was, I can be... What if you've got a child like that? He's brilliant. Well, I don't know. What if he's handicapped? I have a dear friend. His name's Doug Jackson. He and Kathy have a boy that's 30 now, Clint. And Clint is Downs. He's just a great kid. He is a great kid. And once when I was with Doug and Kathy, when Clint was about six, I'm guessing, may have been younger, may have been a little older. We've been there basically every year. But what if, once when I was with him, I noticed that Kathy was pretty hard on Clint. She asked him to do something, and she really got on to him. And so I mentioned it to her. I said, you know, he has Downs, and you were very... very tough on him. She said, Bill, he already has one handicap. I don't want him to have two. Well, that's brilliant, isn't it? So what if he's handicapped? What if he's like his parents? Boy, that's a downer, isn't it? What if he's like his parents? What if he's not saved? Well, you know... Freddie's not saved, and that's why he throws such a a fuss when the pastor comes over to the house. Did you know that obeying and submission and rules have nothing to do with whether or not one is saved? Do you know if you want to join the Army or the Marine Corps, there is no place on the sign-up sheet where you join that asks whether or not you've been saved? They don't care. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean they know how to train if you're saved or lost, smart or slow. Each may have its challenge. It's not about the kind of kids we have. It's about the kind of adults we want to produce. Can I say that again? It's not about the kind of kids we have. It's about the kind of adults we want to produce. Now look, I don't mean to be unkind to you, but you need to face this. If your question is, okay, but my child is unique in that he's different than most, that may be true. That may be true, but don't use that as a ruse to keep you from training your child. You still need to train your child. Just for the fun of it, let's look at some verses we've already looked at. Look at Proverbs 13. Turn back to Proverbs 13. See if I can find this here. Here we go, Proverbs 13. Look down at verse 24. Now, we're going to look at five or six verses, and I want you to think about what kind of child the verse speaks of. Are you following this? What kind of child is God talking about? Okay, here we go. This is chapter 13, verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. What kind of son? What kind of son is this referring to? He that hates his child spares the rod, but if he loves him, he chastens him betimes. What kind of son? Doesn't tell you, does it? It's not about the son, is it? It's about the parents. Look at 19, chapter 19. Chapter 19, and look at verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. What kind of son? What kind of son are you supposed to chasten while there's hope? Is he a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 2-year-old? Is he, now while there's hope would suggest he's younger. Is he tall? Is he short? Is he mean? Is he nice? Is he selfish? Is he giving? Is he stubborn? Is he handicapped? Is he unusually intelligent? Can he play the violin? You don't know, do you? You don't know. In other words, it's not talking about the son. It's talking about the parents. It's all about parents. Look at chapter 22. We spent some time on 22:6. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. What kind of child am I to train up so that when he's old, he'll not depart from it? You don't know, do you? Well, do you? No. You don't know because it doesn't deal with that. Look at, we'll skip 23. Look at 29. We could spend a lot of time here. Look at 29. And look at verse 15. This is one of my favorite verses in Proverbs. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Okay, the rod, that would be the scepter, that would include spanking, and reproof, warnings, teaching, inculcating. They give wisdom. Okay, they give wisdom to what kind of child? What if the child is hard of hearing? What if he has poor eyesight? Do we know what kind of child this is? No. Okay. If I said to you, you know the Johnsons, I make up the name. People were here earlier and know this. I don't know any Johnsons here. And if your name is Johnson, I'm just borrowing it. I'm not talking about you. All right? Maybe I should be. I don't know that. But I'm not talking about you. So, the Johnsons in Tennessee have 3 kids. So you tell me what kind of kids do they have outside of the fact that they're Johnsons. If I say to you, the Johnsons have 3 kids, what do you know about the kind of kids they are? Nothing. You just know that they're kids. Okay. Don't kids come in all sizes and packages and demeanors and desires? I have a good friend. He's an evangelist, Tim Thompson. And he has three boys. His first son, Seth, is 10 or going to be 10 this summer. And his second is 4, Samuel. And his third is just about 2, Asher. And Seth is amazing. Well, they all three are great boys, and they're all three are amazing. But Seth was just amazing. Seth, when he first learned to speak, could say thank you and please and sir and ma'am and remember it every time. And he could stand up and he could shake hands when he went to church and look people in the eye. He was amazing. But Samuel, the second boy, is completely different. You got to love Samuel. He's a great kid. I love Samuel. Samuel is just, he's one of these absolute out-of-the-box challenges. You know what I'm talking about? And Samuel is a character. He's a character. I called him up a month and a half ago, and I was talking to him on the phone, and all of a sudden Asher started crying in the background. That's the youngest. And Tim said, I've got to go. I'll call you back. So about 5 minutes later, he called me back, and I said, is Asher all right? Yes. What happened? Well, Samuel, that's the 4-year-old. That's the rounder. Samuel wanted to get something, and he couldn't reach it. So he brought a stool over to where, you know, he could get up and reach the wanted item, and he set Samuel down on the stool, and he climbed up on Samuel's shoulders to reach the thing. Well, of course, Samuel started crying and whatever happened. Well, that's typical. That's just typical of Samuel. We were at a restaurant, the Thompsons, and Mary and I, and the three boys. And Tim, Dad, said something to Samuel. And Samuel said, yeah. And Tim said, I'm sorry? And Samuel said, yes, sir. You following this? So I'm carrying Samuel, forgive my English. I was carrying Samuel outside of the restaurant. It was night, and we were looking at the stars, and I said, Aren't those stars great, Samuel? Aren't they beautiful? He said, yeah. I said, I'm sorry? He said, oh, that'll be all right. Okay. So that's just the kind of boy. This is my favorite story about Samuel. Samuel turned 4 in November. He had 3 down pat. How old are you, Samuel? I'm this many. How old are you? I'm 3. He had that down pat. But when he turned 4, he just couldn't deal with it. He's always very expressive, you know, and he's just, everything is very dramatic. So we hadn't seen him when his birthday month came around, but we met up with Thompsons in Florida, and they were with us for a month in Florida. So when Mary saw Samuel, he's 4, when Mary saw Samuel, she said, Samuel, how old are you now? And he said, I have no idea. All right. Okay. Well, that's Samuel. Samuel doesn't sit down, he squirms. He's always out, he's always doing something. And he never goes half speed, never. He never. Now, Seth is just the absolute picture of a gentleman at 9 years of age. Samuel presents a different picture at 4 years of age, but they're both well-behaved. Now, if I said to you, which you think it took the most work on, wouldn't you know the answer? Sure, but the point is the work was given. See, it's not about the kind of kids we have, it's about the kind of adults we want to produce. Where'd you come from? I mean, in your own life. Were some of you people saved after you were an adult? Let's make an adult, we'll make it 18. How many of you were saved after 18? Okay. Well, where'd you come from? See, we're not all here because we were all perfect at 5. Were you really good at 5? Were you really good at 7? Were you really good at 18? After you were saved, were you always really good? Are you really good now? And if you say yes, you're deceiving yourselves. The Bible says if we say we do not sin, we deceive ourselves, and His truth is not in us. It's just as simple as that. See, so the deal is, when we say, yeah, but you know, my son is, and then you fill in the blank, it's not the point. The point is that it's all about parents. It's not about the kind of kids you have. When Mary and I wanted to adopt a child, when we got married, we weren't supposed to have any children. So we prayed for children, and the Lord didn't answer our prayer. And so we decided to adopt. So we went through the process, and we were all just about cleared for adoption when we found out that Mary was with child with Will. So when Will was born, we decided to go ahead and adopt the second child, because we didn't think we'd have any more. Well, God did give us Wren 5 years later, I guess. So we adopted Wendy. Wendy lives over near D.C. We adopted Wendy. And people said, you need to consider adoption because they won't have your bloodline. Well, you know what I found out? Wendy does have our bloodline. She's a sinner just like the rest of us. He did. And this is interesting to me. Now, I never think, I mean, I'm cognizant of it in the back of my mind, but I never think Will and Wren, natural born, Wendy adopted. We got Wendy from the hospital. But honestly, there are some areas where Wendy is more like me than Will. And there's some areas where Wendy is more like her mother than Wren. Because I got three kids and they're all different. Do you ever look at one of your kids and say, where'd he come from? Did they swap him out at the hospital? So, yeah, the only constant with any of our kids is the fact that they are sinners. Now look back at verse 20. We'll look at this and our time will be just about gone. I love this. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Now, look back this way, and let me mention this. Children can please God. Now, I know what people mean when they say this, but they're wrong, and so we should just face the fact they're wrong. You know, nothing that you do pleases God. Everything is of God, and you can't gain favor with God. That's simply not true. Now, it is true that I can't save myself. That is true. But it is not true that nothing which one does pleases God. Do things that you do, can things that you do displease God? Okay. Well, then things that you do can please God. And one of them is, in fact, it may be the major one, is obedience. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. It's acceptable. That's what the word means. It's acceptable. It pleases God. Now, I think this is wonderful. You come to church, and there's a guy in a coat and a tie, and he's on the platform. He's either the pastor or the assistant pastor or the song leader or the soloist, or he plays the piano or whatever. He's on the platform, and he has a leadership role in the church. And he leaves the church after the service, and I say to you, did he please God in the service this morning? Well, I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But here comes a four-year-old, and they come into church, and they come to the fourth row, and Daddy says to the four-year-old, you sit over in the fourth seat, and he walks right over there and sits in the fourth seat. Let me tell you, God takes notice. Obedience pleases God. Raises a question, if children are to obey their parents in all things, what if the parents are wrong? You know what? We won't spend the time that's necessary to deal with this, but you need to learn the answer to that. Obedience is obedience is obedience is obedience. If a child decides when to obey because he has to decipher whether or not dad and mom are right or wrong, he's not obeying. That's not what obeying means at all. Obeying leaves the responsibility for rightness or wrongness with the parents. Well, I know you're going to struggle with that. Bless your hearts. I can understand that, but it is true. It is true. And you need to think about it and look at the scriptures. One of the most controversial subjects I could ever deal with is 1 Peter chapter 3. Likewise, you wives, be in submission to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may also without the word be won by the conversation of the wife. Conversation means lifestyle. Okay, wives, be in submission to your husbands, that if any husband obeys not the word, he doesn't listen to God, they may without the word, that's the speaking of the wife, be won, that's an important word in this verse, by the conversation of the wife. Now listen to me. The obedience and submission of the wife to her husband, even when he's not obeying the word, will see him won, and that's God's promise. Yeah, you say, but you know, Brother Bill, you never knew Mrs. Johnson, did you? Poor Johnsons, don't they get beat up here? You never knew Mrs. Johnson. She obeyed. Everything her husband said, he said, hold up the bank, she held up the bank. He said, let's have wife swapping, she wife swapped. He said, let's do all these things. And you see, it just ruined her life and it didn't work. Can I tell you a quick story? Husband wants to go somewhere he shouldn't go. And so he tells his wife, we're going to go there. The place where he shouldn't have gone is a place that represents in the Bible sin. Anybody want to take a guess at the place? It's Egypt. He wants to go to Egypt. It wasn't right for him to go to Egypt. So he comes to his wife and says, we're going to Egypt. She says, okay. Well, when he gets down to Egypt, there's a king down there that sees his wife, and his wife is drop-dead gorgeous. He is just beautiful. You say, are you sure about it? Yeah, I'm sure about it, because the Bible says she was. So she's beautiful. So the king sees her, and the husband lies about their relationship. Is it right to lie? Come on, is it right to lie? No, okay. So the husband lies, says, she's my sister. Well, that was kind of true. She was a half-sister way back, sort of. And she's my sister. She evidently went along with it. And so the king took her to his harem. Now, you see, that's proof that when the wife obeys the husband, it winds up in ruin. So she's taken to the harem. And of course, as we all know, she lost her purity. She was married to the king for the rest of her life. And that terrible story was absolutely nuked into obliteration. It's a terrible story, isn't it? What was the man's name? Abraham. Yeah, what was his wife's name? Have I misrepresented the story somewhat? Not about the obedience. I didn't misrepresent that, did I? Did they go? Was he wrong to go to Egypt? Did he go? Did he lie? Was he a bad guy? Was it the wife's fault? No, it was the husband's fault. What did the wife do? She obeyed husband. What did God do? He intervened. So the king has a dream one night. My goodness, this girl's married. Wow. Now, I don't know if the king even met her. He saw her, but she was one of many, I suspect, in the harem. So he goes to Abram and said, Why in the world did you bring the wrath of God on my head? I'm in big trouble here because you lied to me. So was Sarah spared? Yes or no? Was Abraham taught a lesson? Yes or no? You know why? Because Sarah did what she could do. She obeyed. In this chapter, you have children and parents. Children are mentioned first. You have wives and husband. Wives are mentioned first. You have servants and masters. If you go to the sixth chapter of Ephesians, you have those same three groups, and in every case, the one under authority is mentioned before the one in authority. And that's because if you're under authority, you have more power than you realize if you live in submission. I shouldn't get into this. Somebody's going to say, what about Germany and Hitler? Well, that's really fairly simple to answer. Hitler would never have been in Germany if the people had been submissive to the governorship, to the rule that they had before he came along. What about the American Revolution? You know it's misnamed. I understand it and whatever, but it's misnamed. Did you know our founding fathers, their desire was not to separate from England? They weren't rebels. Whatever they were not rebels. The Southerners were rebels in the Civil War. That's different. But they were not rebels. They were not rebels in the Revolution. They did everything they could. And by the way, England was 3,000 miles away, and you're talking about 6 months. I want to write a letter to the king in England. Okay, you'll get an answer this same time next year. I mean, look, people. These people were not revolutionaries. They were not rebels. They were people that wanted to start an independent country. They had every right to do so, and they did it. But it did cause war, and it has caused us headaches through the years. And the reason is because rebellion of any sort is not right, and obedience is always right. So children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing in the Lord. Then the most fascinating part of this entire passage. Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Sounds like Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, what would cause a child to be angry or bitter or vengeful? What would cause it? And it says it in both passages, a little differently, but it says the same thing. So it says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Don't make your kids mad. And it says in Ephesians 6:4, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Okay, what's it talking about? Well, I'll tell you what it's talking about. How does Ephesians 6 begin? Can you remember? If not, look at it. I want you to see this. Ephesians 6:1. First word is children. So look it up. Ephesians 6:1. First word is children. I want you to look and see what the second word is. Obey. Very good. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Why are children to obey? Because it's right. Honor your father and your mother. That's the first commandment with promise, that it can be well with you and you'll live long on this earth. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Okay. How would a father provoke his child to wrath? How would a father provoke his child to anger? Well, what's verse 20 say in Colossians 3? Children, obey your parents in all things. All right, look at me and listen to this. The bottom line to all of this is obedient children. Do not take guff from your children when it comes to the matter of obedience. Now, listen to me, parents. It doesn't say here, children must understand. They must understand. That's what's important. So that when you're gone, they will carry on understanding what you want. Okay. That's true. The question is, how can they understand? So what would you think the answer to that is? Children, obey, 6:1, Ephesians. Children, obey in all things, 3:20 in Colossians. What brings about understanding? And the answer is obedience. Proverbs 16:3, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. As you roll off your works to God, as you do what God asks or tells you to do, things become clear and you understand. Let me give a quick illustration. Mommy, Junior is 5. Can I go across the street, the one up here by the turkey whatever filling station, what's it called? Yeah, Turkey Hill. Right, okay. So go up by the Turkey Hill. Doesn't that seem like a strange name to you? I don't know what it is. Okay. I don't know why they don't have good, sensible names like we do in Tennessee, like Possum Trot. I mean, Turkey Hill. Okay. So, he wants to play across 374, 784, 892, what, Reading Highway. You got the idea? Can I go across the street and play with Johnny? Mom says, no. And the boy says, why not? He's five. Why not? Because the street is dangerous. I will look both ways, Daddy and Mommy. I will be careful. Let me ask you a question. Does a five-year-old, all things being equal, understand anything about the danger of a major road in the United States of America? No. Does he need to understand that when he's five? No! What does he need to do? Obey Mom. Somebody says experience is the best teacher. Not if you're talking about five-year-olds on a highway. Obedience is. And it always is. So what is it that children are doing? Here's the answer. This is very important. Dad, be sure that your child obeys. Don't dishearten. Don't dispirit your child. Don't make your child angry. Don't make your child upset or mad because you say to do something and he doesn't obey and you let it pass. Now look, obedience is easy to quantify. Understanding is not. 12 years old, carry out the trash. 13 years old, make up your bed. You know, I'm 74. I still don't see why you have to make up your bed. You're just going to get in it 12 hours later. Plus, that's why one gets married, so he'll have someone to make up the bed. All right. So, does a child at 12 need to understand? Now look, let me explain to you the importance of making up the bed. Don't explain the importance. Tell them to make up the bed or die. Now, obviously, I'm being facetious. But tell the kid to make up the bed and make sure that he does it. See? Yes, but the child wants to understand. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. I've used this for years. 18-year-old boy comes to his dad. Dad, can I borrow the car? No, you can't. Why not? Well, because of insurance rates. Well, Dad, I'm already on the insurance. We're already paying the rate. Makes sense, doesn't it? Why not? Well, because there's money for gas. Dad, I'll put $5 in the tank. That's almost a gallon and a half right there. I'll put $5 in the tank. When I was a kid, Dad, we'll put 50 cents in the tank. But anyway, Dad, I'll put $5 in the tank. See how easy it is for the son to give good answers? This is my favorite one. Well, son, I didn't want to bring this up, but you know, the way you drive. And the boy says, have you seen Mom drive lately? Okay, at every turn, the boy has the better answer, does he not? You know why? Because none of that's the point. This is what I used to say to my kids. I didn't say this very often. I don't think it's wrong for kids to ask why either if they do it first. Because then they can understand. But at any rate, ask a youngster to say do something and they say, why, Daddy? And I would say, can you hear? Are your ears okay? Do we need to get your ears checked? What did I say you were supposed to do? You said I was supposed to pick up my toys. Oh, okay, I was afraid maybe you had bad hearing. Let's get them picked up right now. You mean you didn't explain why they should pick up their toys? No, I was concerned that they obey. You following this? Okay, now later, after having obeyed, they learn. For Will, for example, Will's 45. I can promise you, Will always picks up his toys now. He understands the importance of picking up toys. See, he understands it now because he obeyed when he was five. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, Ephesians 6:4, here, and you fathers, provoke them not to anger, lest they be discouraged. If you ask your child to do something, be sure he obeys. If you ask him not to do something, be sure he obeys. It's easy to quantify. I can tell you if a four-year-old obeys or not. I can tell you if, all things being equal, a three-year-old does. I understand there's not a lot of understanding with a three-year-old, not that much with a four-year-old, but you can tell if they obey or not. See? And it's either obedience and instant, or it's rebellion and harmful. Let's bow for prayer. Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for giving us help in our homes. Help us to live by it, I pray in Jesus' name and for His sake. Amen.